Hey everyone, and welcome to a new special episode of the Equalizer podcast. The U.S. roster is out, and today I'm joined by Ariana Cascone and Jeff Kasouf to discuss everything about the United States World Cup roster. Jeff, Ariana, how are we doing today?
I'm good. I'm so excited to be back and to chat all things U.S. with you both.
Yeah, no, I mean, roster day, I think for players is when it gets kind of real. And you know, I think on our end too, it's we're under 30 days out now. And we've been talking about it on the pod a little bit. Certainly, you know, I think from like a media perspective too, this is like when you start feeling like all your content is starting to get rushed and crammed in. So definitely real on this end.
Yeah, it absolutely feels like it's coming together. Everything we've been talking about for so long has just been conjecture. And now that it's actually solidified and we know exactly the team that's going, and, you know, it does seem like it's finally and suddenly very real. So as we learned late last week, Captain Becky Sauerbrunn is off the roster due to injury, and that's a huge exclusion for the team, and we will talk about that later. And then also we have the surprising inclusion of midfielder Savannah DeMello, who is only the third player in United States history to make the roster without having a single prior senior team cap. So this is not your typical everyday roster. There are some big things to talk about. But before we get into those specifics, guys, what are your first impressions? Jeff, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I think, you know, look, this was the most uncertainty that this is my third World Cup on the ground, fourth, you know, covering deeply. Like, this is usually a time and place where I think we're talking about a fringe player or two and what that might come down to. You know, maybe in the end, that's kind of what we're talking about. But I think it was not outlandish to speculate about a dozen or so, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, I saw Vlatko Nanovsky talking about he made 39 calls. I saw he just told Sirius XM radio. So, you know, those 39, 23 on, you know, and that leaves, you know, the 16 there to be the disappointing phone calls, which he talked about, you know, what those are like and how tough those are. So, you know, I think the general uncertainty, obviously driven by injuries, I cannot think of a time, certainly around a major tournament, in which the volume and scale of major injuries was this prominent, and right down to the Sauerbrunn injury being the most recent and, you know, I don't know if it's abrupt, certainly the setback was, but just, you know, this close to the roster date in the World Cup. So, yeah, I think that, you know, this was unique. I think it's going to be, you know, a different kind of World Cup in a lot of ways for this team that, you know, from what we're used to of past cycles where there was just, you know, so much continuity in terms of the roster and just names that had been around for a long time. So yeah, I think more so than any, like, you know, individual surprise, I think that for me, it's just the prevailing theme of, you know, relative lack of experience in some regard. And, you know, that doesn't necessarily, it's not inherently negative, but it's a continued uncertainty, right? I mean, we'll talk about it. It's, you know, we're still talking about players on this roster. Like, I mean, I think the first half hour of Vlatko Nanovsky's availability from this roster drop was just specific questions about players who are injured and who have not played and who picked up recent injuries and, you know, and they're still on this 23 player roster. So yeah, I think, you know, some clarity, a good amount of clarity, but still a lot to figure out.
Well, Jeff mentions injuries, Ariana. So I'm actually interested in your take. How much do you think injuries are going to impact this U.S. team? But then also, the U.S. is not alone with this. There are major injuries in teams across the World Cup. This has just been a year where injuries have been catastrophic. It seems like almost every day, every week, we are hearing about a new one. So how do you think that not only are injuries going to impact this specific team, but how do you think they're going to impact this World Cup as a whole?
Yeah, it's been really unfortunate to see, you know, these injuries coming, like you say, impacting so many different teams, you know, England, the Netherlands, the United States, teams that I'm forgetting off the top of my head right now. But in terms of the U.S. specifically, I think, you know, Becky Sauerbrunn, this might be the recency effect, but I'm really thinking that the U.S. will feel her loss at the World Cup. you know, she brings some intangibles, I think, in terms of leadership, a steadiness to the back line. Like, she's been there before, right? She's their captain. Mm-hmm. And not being there, I think, will be, you know, obviously it will be a change for that back line. But just thinking specifically about the back line with Becky Sauerbrunn's absence, it's really young, right? And so I think when I look at this roster, you know, we always talk about the United States depth. And I think actually at center back specifically, there's not much depth here. There are two true center backs on this roster, right? Naomi Girma and Alana Cook. And I think, you know, before the Becky Sauerbrunn news, I was totally thinking Sauerbrunn and Girma would be the starting two.
Agreed.
And, you know, with Becky Sauerbrunn out, I'm assuming that Alana Cook would step into the starting role, but she's had a little bit of a rocky NWSL season in her, you know, minutes with the national team leading up to the tournament. I'm not sure that she has been as steady as either Sauerbrunn or Girma. And also there's the added layer that Cook and Girma don't really have that much experience together as a pair back there. So I think that's one position in particular that I'm really thinking about injuries impacting specifically.
Yeah, I mean, you said it. They just don't have experience together. And in the article I wrote talking about Becky Sauerbrunn injury, like just the kind of instant reaction to it when it was announced on Friday that she'd be missing the roster, you know, I looked in and found that out of 21 possible games since Girma debuted in April 2022, Girma and Cook have only been paired up for 7. And they've only played 4 90-minute games together. They've only played a total of 548 minutes together. So for this very young center back pairing to be heading into a World Cup with less than 550 minutes playing together, that's kind of scary. It's very clear that the plan had been that it was going to be Becky and it was going to be one of these young center back kind of apprentices paired next to her. And Girma was clearly seeming to be like the initial chosen one. So, you know, as you said, Becky's leadership is so critical because it's so important to keep a back line, particularly the center back pairings, organized. And these are players going in with very little experience, well, no experience in major tournaments at the senior level. And they're going to kind of have to be figuring this out as they go. That's a little worrisome. So, Jeff, it's not just them who are inexperienced on this squad. There are, I believe, 14 players that have never been part of a major tournament or at least a World Cup on this roster. What does that say about this roster? And how do you think, you already talked about this a little bit, but how do you think this inexperience is going to impact this team?
Yeah, you know, I was thinking as you guys were talking, and you know, I think 2015, we saw a little bit of this where, you know, Julie Johnston, now Ertz Johnston at the time, was essentially emerged as that center back partner in the spring, right before the World Cup, which was obviously the past two have been even earlier in the calendar of the part of the year. So I don't think it's unprecedented to not have the partnership necessarily have a lot of experience, but obviously the other side of that partnership in 15 was Becky Sauerbrunn, who was at least relatively established at that point. So I think that's where, you know, Girman Cook paired as we think they will be. I mean, Blackononovsky did say today that he's at least thinking about the idea of Julie Ertz at center back once again, I guess. So, you know, how, you know, he was directly prompted about that question. So how serious that is, we'll see. But, you know, I think it's the combination, right? I think, you know, I think it's a microcosm of what your bigger question is there, right? And for me, you know, inexperience is a bit of a catch 22 in that you have to find it and go through it in order to gain it, right? It's like wisdom. And until you actually do that, you can't obtain it. And if you never do it, you'll never have it. So, you know, I don't think it's necessarily something to hold against the odds of the team. I think it's really interesting that, you know, even myself in preparation and writing some things around, you know, in advance of this roster, I kept sort of referring to it as a young team and I had to check myself and, you know, I was looking and then we got the roster itself with the note, obviously, that this age, the average age is negligibly the exact same as the last two when they were the oldest team at the World Cup. So, you know, there's 14 players who have never been here, but you look at, you know, okay, Christy Mewis first time, right? Lynn Williams first time. You know, some of these first time appearances are not, you know, they're not 20-year-old players, right? So I think it's an inexperience at this level, at this stage. It's not necessarily a lack of experience overall, where you look and say, oh, wow, this is like, you know, a youth team that just graduated up to, you know, to the senior level. But yeah, I do think that, you know, it could be a factor. You obviously have some veterans remaining. I mean, I wrote about this. I think, you know, I had, you know, people wonder about our side of the world sometimes. I mean, I had a 3,000 word feature on Becky Sauerbrunn's leadership and career that obviously needed a lot of reworking and still managed to, you know, to salvage some of that. But I think there are other leaders, but look, her singular, just the way that she leads, right? The awe that she is in. I mean, I haven't heard anything bad said about any of the others either, right? But if you just ever heard anybody talk about Becky Sauerbrunn, including today, the six or seven players available, it's like you can tell from how they're speaking that there's a very different level of respect and just like anything she says goes, right? The moral compass, as they said. So, you know, that missing, I think, is huge. She was a liaison basically for Vlatko Nanovsky to players. But yeah, I think, you know, I don't want to be redundant with the term inexperienced. But I mean, I think there's plenty of talent on this team is probably the best way to put it. And for me, the questions are, is there enough talent for this very level, which, you know, bluntly is winning another World Cup, right? And is it the right time? Because I think World Cups, I'm very confident World Cups are about timing. And you know, I think maybe they got a little bit lucky in the timing in 2015 in terms of it finally coming together mid-tournament. In 2019, they hit their peak going into the tournament, as other teams didn't. And, you know, with this one, it is, to me, I look and see a ton of individual talent, a ton of potential, a lot of players who are maybe 10-year future veterans or will be around for that long is what I mean. But are they ready at this moment, all of them collectively so fresh to go win a World Cup? I think that's going to be the really tough question.
So you mentioned, Jeff, the, you know, Becky's captaincy and her leadership and the way she's held in awe and how important she was, particularly for her relationship with Vlatko as a go-between him and the players. Who do you both think is going to potentially fill that captaincy role in her absence? I believe today Vlatko said that it's still under discussion. So Ariana, who do you think is going to wear the captain's band? Do you think it's going to float around depending on who's on the field? And then Jeff, I'd be interested in your take after Ariana gives hers.
I mean, I think it's kind of hard to tell what's going on, you know, behind the scenes of any team, but I, you know, Alex Morgan, Lindsey Horan, those are players that have worn the captain's bands for the US at various points. And so I wouldn't be surprised with either of those players. I mean, they do bring experience. Obviously, Alex Morgan, more World Cup experience than a player like Lindsey Horan. But, you know, I'm interested to see what Jeff is thinking on this one, too.
No, I agree. I mean, those are the two. I would agree as well with not knowing what's, you know, necessarily exactly happening within the team, especially because they aren't together, right? So I think... I'm sure Vlatko has an idea, but, you know, until they're sort of together come Monday. And I mean, that was part of his answer. He said he wanted to talk to them first and that'll be when he can collectively. So, you know, I think regardless of who wears the armband, like I thought Crystal Dunn said this well, right after the announcement here was, you know, whether she wears the armband or not, she leads how she leads and she does that to the best of her ability. I think we're going to hear some more of that from, you know, from Alex Morgan, from Megan Rapinoe, even in more of a reserve role as we expect her to be in. And, you know, maybe that's taken on more from, you know, from the bench, quote unquote, but just day to day in the practice setting. Right. You know, who wears the arm man? I think, I don't know. I don't know if it's a red herring, but you know, it's, I think it'll have some focus, but like the bottom line is that, you know, I think collectively they've got to figure out a way to fill that void.
Very interesting. And this is actually a great time to take a quick break. So stay with us. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the other surprises on the roster and answer some questions that our listeners submitted to us on Twitter. So we'll be right back. ¶¶ All right, we are back with the Equalizer podcast. So I don't think there's any question the biggest surprise on this roster was the inclusion of Savannah DeMello, the Racing Louisville midfielder, who has absolutely excelled in club play, but has not had a single senior team cap. Now, she was called into the national team twice, once in September and once in October, but she has no minutes with the team. And she's only the third player in U.S. women's national team history or their World Cup history to make a World Cup roster without having a cap. What is your response to her inclusion, Ariana? Were you shocked by it, or do you think that this is a reasonable addition?
I think she's played her way onto this roster. I don't know if being shocked would be appropriate, because she has been really, really good in the NWSL. It's not like she's been, like, you know, kind of average and then she's making her way on this roster. I think she's been one of the top midfielders in the league this year. So in that aspect, I'm not surprised. I am a little bit surprised because of her inexperience with the national team. But as we've sort of been talking about, right, like in order to get that experience, you need to be, you know, in the mix and sort of do these things. I like that analogy that Jeff used before about wisdom. But, you know, I have been saying this on the pod and I have been writing about it. It's unclear whether league play always translates to international play.
Yeah.
And so that is something I'm really interested in thinking about. And Savannah DeMello is not actually the only player I'm thinking when I'm asking that question, right? Like another in particular is Alyssa Nayer, right? Having a really rocky season in Chicago and presumably being the U.S.'s number one. So I think it will be interesting to see, you know, what DeMello's role will actually be. I don't imagine it's going to be starting, but, you know, which is different from her role in Louisville, right?
Absolutely.
So that's one thing to keep in mind. Like, she will presumably be a player that's coming off the bench and having to adjust to that. And that's sort of like a different role and a different mindset. And so, you know, I don't doubt that she's up for the challenge, but I think it will be, you know, just different for her. And so we'll sort of have to see how she's able to adapt and sort of step into the role that she's needing to fill.
I've had kind of the lucky perspective of covering her pro career, at least from the beginning, because I am based in Kentucky and I do cover Racing Louisville extensively. And the thing that gives me the most hope about her inclusion is the fact that this is not that dissimilar to how she entered the pros. She was just kind of thrown in there from Racing Louisville and is like, okay, we're expecting you to be an extremely efficient starter. And she was able to do it. And she's actually said that she thrived by that immediate pressure. It didn't give her time to worry or question her role. It was just like, okay, I'm doing this. I'm getting thrown into the fire. And I agree. She's not just going to like suddenly be starting the way she was in racing, but I mean, she has at least proven that she can go through these kind of dramatic environmental changes and excel in them. And as you say, she's been extremely effective in club play so far this year. She's been involved in 12 goals in 12 appearances and has 8 goals across 15 games across all competition in the NWSL. That's already double what her goal production was in 2022. So, you know, she's been very effective at the club level. But you're right. Is it going to translate into the senior level? I don't know. I'm curious, Jeff, what you think her role is going to be, and also what her inclusion says, because Vlatko has been saying for years now the experience matters. I want to get players to a certain number of caps. You know, he was saying like Emily Fox, we want to get her to at least, I believe the number was 35 caps, because that is what we found in our studies, like teams do better when they have players that reach this certain threshold. Obviously, DeMello throws that to the wind. So is this a reversal on his part? Or, you know, is this just a player playing so well, they couldn't say no to her?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is what, when you hear form matters, I think this is what it's supposed to look like, right? It's a player who at least has been in and around and seen some of the environment within a camp. Obviously, went through youth national teams, but also is so undeniably on fire that you could not possibly leave her behind, right? And you know, I think that I've seen some other arguments of players who look good in the league who happen to be American. And you know, I mean, look, maybe they're options for 2027, but, you know, suddenly playing well or playing well after changing a position 2 months ago and, you know, thinking that they might be at a World Cup, that's not actually realistic. That is not what sort of form matters here actually means. And I think the idea that he made 39 phone calls, I think illustrates probably pretty well what that pool looked like and, you know, how many people were in consideration. But yeah, I think, you know, in terms of her role, let's see how healthy Rose Lavelle is and how that plays out, because, you know, if there's an issue there, then suddenly, you know, you're looking for whether that's a starting number 10 or, you know, someone to play more prominently to take, you know, a load off of her in rotation in the group stage, whatever that is. You know, that's been Ashley Sanchez. Is it still Sanchez? Does DeMelo keep on thriving and just steamrolling, you know, through every sort of challenge that she faces and takes over sort of the number two, the second number 10 role? You know, I think that'll be the question. And a lot of how much we see of either of them is probably frankly dictated by how healthy Rose Lavelle is.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I mean, I guess the other thing about DeMelo that should be mentioned is that she can play in any position across the midfield. So I think that also helped her. For racing, at least, she's played as the six, she's played as the eight, she's played as the 10, she's played everywhere. So I, depending on what happens, you know, you can plug her in for a few minutes as cover if necessary. But okay, if DeMelo was the biggest surprise inclusion, let's talk about exclusions. In my mind, maybe potentially Adi Franch being left off for Audrey Kingsbury after Adi Franch has been, you know, a major person to always be included in these tournaments as one of the backup keepers. Of course, we also have Ashley Hatch left off. Ariana, what do you think is the biggest surprise exclusion in your mind?
I would say probably Hatch. And this is not to say that I think, you know, automatically she should be making it over another player. I think she was sort of, in my mind at least, in the mix the most. I mean, of course, you know, offline we were talking a little bit about Taylor Korniak's inclusion in the midfield. So I was honestly a little bit surprised not to see her. I know that she's been dealing with injury. And, you know, as I said, I think Savannah DeMelo did play her way into this midfield group, but, you know, it's rough. That many players and 23 spots is just rough. And I think during his press conference, Lacko did acknowledge about, you know, the depth of the United States. And I think that making that number of phone calls that he did sort of like speaks to that in a way.
Jeff, I'm interested in your thoughts on this. And also, are you surprised that they brought another midfielder instead of bringing a dedicated center back?
Well, I think it speaks to the development. I mean, Ariana mentioned this before, right? The center back pool right now, you look at the injuries in it, and they're not even necessarily new injuries. Sauerbrunn, obviously, is Dahl Kemper, who was the starting center back alongside her 4 years ago, has been hurt for, you know, a year or so now, basically. You know, I think it's certainly alarming about the lack of depth in the center back pool, period, but certainly in terms of those who have been in and around the team. But yeah, I think that's, you know, a main takeaway and certainly one to, you know, frankly be addressed immediately for Paris 2024. Right. And then, a little bit more time to do that for 2027. And I think there are some prospects. I mean, I think, you know, we've touched on Girma here. I think, you know, one for the future for some time, right. A ball playing center back, you know, certainly like Cook and to our point of sort of them, you know, diving into the deep end here together in this World Cup. Like I think both, you know, have some nuances to figure out and as to be expected as younger players. But, you know, I think Girma's is one that you look at and others, you know, beyond us, right? I mean, Casey Stoney says this on a weekly basis, like, and she was a very good center back herself, right? You know, that this is a player that's going to be really good for a really long time. So, you know, I think you've got that, you've got her. But yeah, I think, you know, in terms of the surprises, you know, I think Hatch is the one. I mean, to me, I think the bigger thing there was you lose Sauerbrunn, and there's not necessarily a direct replacement for center back. I think what actually really happens in reality is those names didn't change necessarily, or we don't think, but, you know, whereas Emily Sonnet was maybe I think that's where it could have changed, right? It's like Emily Sonnet's a fullback depth, and maybe she's actually now, she has to now be a center back depth. Agreed, and maybe that opens a door for, you know, I don't know who was, you know, most on the bubble there among fullbacks, but is that Sofia Huerta sliding in? You know, Kelly O'Hara's obviously, this is her fourth World Cup. So, I mean, I think that's where you see that. And, you know, the Hatch, dropping Hatch is, you know, you can look and say, well, where's the number nine? And he did address this, Flacco, today as well of, you know, I mean, we saw this in the fall, right? I mean, I think it was telling when Morgan was hurt and stayed behind on that Europe trip, and, you know, both Hatch and Smith, among others, were available, and they played Smith as the number nine. Mm-hmm. And I think that was very indicative of what was to come here, in that there was more trust there. She obviously plays that anyway for Portland. And, you know, you have abundant depth at the wing where you can move Smith into the nine if you need to, you know, if you're resting Morgan or whatever that might look like, and you have enough wingers to go ahead. So I think, you know, obviously this is all a little bit of a Tetris game. You've got some of your versatile players, but, you know, I don't know that I'm necessarily surprised about the reaction, you know, the sort of second moves after these injuries, these drop players, these changes.
So let's move on to some questions from our listeners. We asked for all our listeners' takes on what they thought of the roster. We asked them to send their comments and questions, and we got a few good ones. So to start it off, and I'm going to start with you, Ariana, Eli Gondor Rude asked, do you think we're going to see a consistent starting 11? And if so, who do you think is going to make it?
I really like this question. This is something I've been thinking about too. And I think based on Vlatko's decisions, like in the CONCACAF tournament last summer, where he made a lot of rotation to his lineup, I would imagine the World Cup will be a similar situation. I don't doubt that there is, you know, a go-to 11 that is, you know, in Vlatko Ananovski's mind, his, you know, strongest combination of players. But based on his track record, and also the fact that the World Cup kind of is a grueling tournament, rotation will be necessary if the U.S. wants to make a deep run. So, yes, I do think that there's going to be a fair amount of rotation this tournament for the U.S.
And what about you, Jeff? What are your thoughts? How much do you think we're going to have a pretty stable starting 11, and how much do you think we're going to, as Ariana says, be forced to rotate players and try different combinations?
Yeah, I mean, 2019, the evidence is there, right? I think it's just a little bit more tricky with the strongest team in the group being the second game instead of the third this time for the U.S. But, I mean, any team trying to win the whole World Cup, which whatever that is, a handful of realistic teams, right? You know, they're thinking about seven games and not three, and that inherently leads to, you know, different lineups in the group stage. Certainly, I think, you know, typically you'd roll out your best lineup in that first game just to see it and see how it performs, even if that is against Thailand last time and it's 13-0, even if that is Vietnam and maybe something similar is possible, right? You do that anyway. And then, you know, I think you're, you know, in terms of like, what is your lineup? You don't know that till some stage of the knockout stage, if you're fortunate enough to go deep into that. So, you know, I think, you know, I won't absolve myself from this. Like, we're all going to have tons of reaction when that first 11 rolls out against Vietnam, right? And again, against the Netherlands. But, you know, the reality of it is a lot of it is pretty scripted. And then, you know, the real sort of telling stuff comes after all of that, you know, maybe round of 16 being the starting point.
So it's not surprising that there are a whole lot of questions about our center backs and the center back pairing that we discussed of Girma and Cook most likely being our starting pairing. I saw a lot of people online questioning, well, why didn't they bring Tierna Davidson or Casey Kruger, you know, just to have more center back depth. And, you know, we discussed some of the reasons of why the back line might be the way it's situated the way it is. But Hannah asks us about what the team will do if that center back pairing does not work. Would they slip into a back five and stick Ertz back there with the center backs just to provide an extra buffer? Or do you think that they would just knock out either Cook and Girma and put either Sonnet or Ertz back there in order to kind of change things up and try and find a pairing that does work? Ariana, what do you think they would do if Cook and Girma don't end up working out well?
Yeah, I think it would be very bold to change the formation that the U.S. has gone with so consistently. So I don't imagine that we'll see a back five, even if the two center backs don't look so great together. I could imagine a situation where maybe Naomi Girma and Alana Cook are not gelling, or, you know, something with the back line in general is not going well, and Earth slotting back there for one of them. You know, hard to tell which player without having seen any World Cup minutes from either of them. But, you know, I think that the last game that the U.S. plays before they go off to the World Cup could give us a little bit of insight into some of these questions that we have about the back line. So, I'm interested to see, you know, that game is not too far away, right? A couple weeks away. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we'll see sort of who gets the nod to start. And then if there are substitutions in the back line, sort of what those are. I would guess that Ertz might slot into center back, but again, not seeing a back five probably.
Jeff, what do you think? Do you agree with Ariana?
I definitely agree. I don't think we're seeing a back five anywhere unless they're, you know, trying to kill a game in the final 10 minutes. And, you know, especially in the knockout stage, you know, I mean, my prevailing, like, beyond personnel is, like, again, the depth. Like, if there is any struggle among Cook and Girma or in the back line period, the U.S. itself is in trouble. That's my first reaction. Right. And you know, I think that's certainly a worry for, you know, an onlooker trying to sort of figure out how this might play out, right? If there needs to be any kind of a shakeup, is it Ertz? You know, I think it's a good question. I don't know that we have an answer yet. I mean, I think that makes sense in a vacuum as someone who is a standout in the 2015 World Cup. I mean, even saying that, it's 8 years ago, right? At center back when she was there. And she obviously brings the experience that is valued. And, you know, you have some options there in midfield where, you know, obviously the past year has been Andy Sullivan at the number six position, right? So, you know, I think you can see how that could play out, whether it does or not. I mean, I think the most likely scenario, honestly, is that these are the two center backs, right? And they figure it out. And that's really my feeling on how this looks. And maybe there'll be a lot of hand wringing from the outside. Maybe there's some learning, you know, trial by fire to whatever degree, but I don't really foresee a scenario where they are voluntarily that project is abandoned, because it changes way too much of the sort of foundation of what has been built toward before this Sauerbrunn injury.
Yeah. I have to agree with both of you. And, you know, actually, Sheaf asks a question that slots very perfectly into this. We talked about rotation. We talked about Ertz's role. Sheaf wants to know, who is the going to be the starting holding midfielder? Is it going to be Ertz? Is it going to be Sullivan? Or is this one of the spots that we're going to be seeing a lot of rotation? Ariana, I'd love to hear from you first.
I would imagine it will be Julie Ertz. You know, if she's not immediately needed in the back line, I think bringing her back into the fold and sort of, you know, playing her in the matches earlier in the year. And I think that it was telling. That's not to say that I don't think Andy Sullivan will play at the six at all. I just think that Julie Ertz is probably going to be the starter.
What about you, Jeff?
Yeah. Julie Ertz was the starter with that. As soon as her return was announced, right? And I think that's a crappy thing for Andy Sullivan, obviously. You know, I don't think that's a slight on her. I think that is an indication of just what the plans here are. And this is the bet of the tournament for the U.S., right? Like, I mean, Ertz at her best is an all-world player. She's only had a handful of games, a little bit more than that, with Angel City to get back into a groove. The bet here, the gamble, the expectation is that she's going to be back to some version of her 2019 self for this tournament, and that's going to be at the number six position. And that is the, you know, the gamble that you know, Andonovsky and company are making and are confident in making. So I agree. I mean, we will see Sullivan somewhere in this tournament, but that's what I was saying earlier about the foundation that's been built. I mean, you know, Ertz's return was answering a question that just hadn't been solved for so long in theory anyway. And to then have to say, okay, let's move her back to center back. And we're, you know, why did we bring her back to fill this void that we've just, you know, we've sort of opened up again. I don't see that happening, but that is going to be, you know, this might sound hyperbolic and, you know, be very sort of media thing, but it is like how that experiment, not experiment, but I don't think it's an experiment given her experience, but how that approach plays out, I think dictates everything else and can be looked at, you know, postmortem here in the World Cup as to how things played out for the team in terms of, you know, this was the answer to losing Julie Ertz in the end was Julie Ertz, right? To bring her back. And what does that mean after the fact?
So the next question or other comment comes from John Garner. And he says that he believes that Kruger and Davidson are better than Huerta and Cook. This just kind of brings up the question more of like, well, how do you really determine who is better than someone else? Do you think, Ariana, that in terms of the back line, Vlatko has selected truly the best pool of players in light of Becky Sauerbrunn's absence? Or is there anybody that you would have selected differently with especially with Becky out or just in general for this roster?
Yeah, this is a good question. I mean, I think that a lot of there are some level of concrete sort of analytics based things that go into choosing these players.
You are a data
person. So it's interesting to hear people's opinions of who is better than who, right? That question could be answered using some metrics that people might be interested in, right? The US has some database that they can reference. So the other side to that argument though is, if a player is the best on paper, do they fit perfectly into the United States system, right? So I think that is, it's sort of a two-part thing to think about. And I think Vlatko Andonovsky and, you know, the U.S. coaching staff has selected players that will fit in their system, right? The way that they want to play, the players that can play the way that they want them to. So, you know, I don't know what's the behind the scenes are. I don't know what the data they're using to, you know, evaluate these players is, but I would imagine that it's not just like an opinion type of thing, right? Like this player is better than another player. No, I think it's more quantitative than that in some way. And then also thinking about like, will this player and their strengths play into the system? I think Megan Rapinoe has spoken about this before, right? Like every player has something very specific that they bring to the US. And just because a player is left off of a roster doesn't mean that like they are not good enough. It just might not be what the US needs like for this run to the World Cup, right? And that's paraphrasing some of Rapinoe's comments that she's made in the past. But I think that sort of sentiment does ring true when we think about, you know, who has made the roster versus who has left off.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's well said. I mean, the idea that I know that people want to think that this is like some game of favorites or, you know, whatever this sort of like nefarious thing is of why things happen. And I mean, look, I think certainly we can disagree with final conclusions, right? Of who makes it, who doesn't. To your point, to both of your points, really. I mean, I don't have any real major issues here when I look at, I think Casey Kruger has a case individually, even within a very a Chicago team that is really struggling, right? And that's touches on the Nair piece a little bit. You know, Tierna Davidson, I think it was a tight timeline. I don't even know how much, you know, the post injury is a piece of that as much as same thing is there's been a lot of struggles in Chicago. Obviously she and they have been part of those. They are not solely responsible for them, but I mean, it's hard to sort of fully separate a really bad defensive record from the defenders in it. Right. Sometimes. Yeah. So, I don't have a particular problem with the end result, or I think that we should be able to disagree on that while acknowledging, like, you know, nobody's throwing darts here. I mean, you know, there's an extensive process. Some of that is data driven, as Ariana said. I think there's obviously an eye test. There's obviously, I mean, look, this is coaching, right? People see things that we, as the common person, as common people, do not. And coaches see things differently from coach to coach, very drastically even. So, you know, I think that the process itself is, it's not foolproof, but it's certainly detailed and exhaustive. Whether the, you know, the end results or not are there, you know, is what we're debating right now, I guess, right?
Absolutely. And I mean, Vlatko said today, the hardest thing in the world is to call someone and tell them they're not making a World Cup. So these decisions aren't being made lightly by any means. So yeah, that's just, I don't know. It's always so interesting to me to hear people say definitively, well, this person is better than this person. Well, in what context? In what role? What's their chemistry with the other players? You know, there's no perfect answers to this. Jeff, you described it perfectly as a game of Tetris to try and fit together the best combination. So yeah, I really liked that question or that comment, because it really kind of brings up this idea of, well, how do you choose? It's almost an impossible task. And kind of in line with this, Kate March questions choosing Megan Rapinoe over and Thompson, rather, choosing Megan Rapinoe and Thompson over bringing Ashley Hatch. And we already talked about this a little bit, because she says that not having a distinctive backup for Alex Morgan seems dangerous. And we already talked about this a little bit. So I'm going to change this question a little bit to just ask your takes on what you think the front line is going to be organized as. Like, who do you think is going to be Alex's definite backup? Who do you think it is going to be the starting three if they do play in the 4-3-3 that they have been typically? Jeff, I'll start with you on this.
Yeah, I mean, Smith is the backup number nine, right? I mean, that's what's driving the lack of Hatch on this roster. Like I said, we saw that in the fall. You know, that there's enough flexibility there. I mean, for me, I don't know that we have a definitive answer yet. I mean, at least I don't from the outside. Maybe Vlatko Nanovsky does, in terms of it's Morgan central, it's Smith running off of her on one side, and then who's that other one has been the question since Mallory Swanson went down in early April. And, you know, I don't know. I think there's, again, back to the point, and this is where I think it's important. Like, you know, I think we could easily get into like the unfortunate side of media of like the hot take isms, and we could say it's got to be Williams, or it's got to be Rodman, or why isn't it Thompson? But the reality is actually, well, okay, Vietnam, I mean, Portugal is not the same game by any means as a Vietnam, but like either of those games, the answer might well be Rodman or Thompson as a game that you expect to be fully on the front foot. The answer against the Netherlands, I would pretty much more confidently say, is Lynn Williams as a player who is absolutely your two-way winger, your best defender, best defensive-minded winger, who has proven time and again that she can handle that responsibility if it's dropping deep, if it's being in a high press. So, like, the answer is different anyway. So, I mean, I think that, you know, it's Morgan and Smith as that sort of go-to, especially as you get to that latter stage where you're not really talking about a rotation. You're not talking about a weaker opponent at a quarterfinal stage. If you get there, you know, I think it's those two, and then who runs off of them. And I mean, the answer is going to be different for a group stage opponent. And then depending on how that plays out, I think will be whoever prevails from that sort of makes the run of the tournament, whatever that looks like. I know I've got to keep couching it because we're used to them going the seven games. You know, I think a lot of us are wondering if that's going to happen again. Right. But, you know, I think that's what it'll look like.
Ariana, what about you? And just bringing up what Jeff mentioned, do you think we're going to see Lynn Williams, for example, get a lot of minutes during this World Cup, at least initially?
Yeah, I mean, I could see that happening. I think, like Jeff said, she is, you know, she brings a really important defensive abilities to the attack for the U.S. But I sort of am on the same wavelength as Jeff here, thinking about like context and who the opponent is and, you know, when in the tournament we're thinking about. I think those contexts, or those pieces of context will really play into like who we see in the attack. And that might even be true about the midfield, right? If we're thinking more broadly about the roster.
Sure, sure. I agree 100%. And Ariana, Jeff, this has been a really fun conversation. It's really getting exciting with the World Cup coming so soon now. You know, it feels like it's going to be tomorrow now. Like it's been coming for months and months. Now suddenly it's here. And I want all our listeners to know that Equalizer is going to have some really excellent World Cup coverage coming up. And we are having a flash sale right now for the Equalizer subscription. You can get the rest of the year for only $23. So check out our social media, particularly Twitter, for how you can get that discount if you're not yet a subscriber. Ariana, Jeff, thank you so much for joining me today. We would like to thank our producer, Jacqueline Purdy. And for Equalizer, I'm Becky Morgan. See you next time.